Welcome to the home of Blood, Sweat, and Words, a podcast that empowers writers. My name is Joanne Carson. I'm a fiction and nonfiction author, blogger, and podcaster, and I'm trying to make sense of the writing world today. My weekly show is current, relevant, and above all, honest. Join me, and we'll talk it to the bone. That's what Blood, Sweat, and Words is all about. As for my personal update, right now I'm drafting a book called Podcasting for Authors, and I'm having a lot of fun with that because it's making me really reflect on my practice and what I've learned so far. I'm also getting close to launching my Christmas novella. The title is Murder for Christmas. Think Agatha Christie meets The House of Usher. When codebreaker Madison Rathbone gets an all-expense-paid trip to a remote island in the Pacific Northwest the week before Christmas, she expects a peaceful getaway from the fake Santas in the city and the drama of her family's turkey feast. But Dead Man's Island offers no such sanctuary. Trapped in a maze of secrets, scandals, and murder, with a side of ghost, Maddie struggles to make sense of it all. Macabre stories of gruesome deaths on the estate go back centuries. Her logical mind refuses to believe in legends, but there's no reasonable explanation for what's going on around her. 12 strangers invited to the gathering discover turkey is not the only thing on the menu, as one by one they meet their maker. The novella will be available in November. Welcome to Episode 7 on Blood, Sweat, and Words. I'm your host, Joanne Carson. Today I'm interviewing Bonnie Edwards, and our topic is sex on the page. But first, let me tell you a bit about Bonnie. Multi-published, award-winning, hybrid author Bonnie Edwards has been writing different heroines for years. Often pink collar, her heroines have done everything from driving tow trucks to being virtual assistants. Some are single mothers. Others are struggling, divorced college students. Still others are older with more experience, but all of them are confident in themselves and how they live. Writing is her passion and writing romance her obsession. As she says, there's nothing quite like giving a woman her happy ending after she's been through hell. Welcome, Bonnie.
Well, thanks, Joanne. Thanks for having me here. It's kind of exciting.
Yeah, we're trying something new today. We're actually both on the mic. There aren't many people I can say changed my life in one day, like the day I met them, but you are one of them. It was 7 years ago. You were talking about scene and sequel. It's an item of craft in writing, and you blew my mind. You took us inside the technical aspects of developing a strong plot and explained it in plain words. You're a skilled and masterful storyteller, and I'm thankful to have attended several of your workshops. Now, whenever I'm crafting a scene, I ask myself, what would Bonnie do next? Now, let's get to the questions for today. Do you consider yourself a writer of erotica or a steamy romance writer?
Well, the first thing I want to tell you, Joanne, is that you should stop wondering what I would do next and wonder about what your characters will do next.
Indeed.
So, that's my tip of the day for you. And thank you so much for your kind words. Changing somebody's life is pretty spectacular. It doesn't happen every day. Do I write erotica? No, I never have. I write romance. Never really written erotica. Haven't had any interest in that. I've also been quoted in a how-to book on romance called Writing Romance by the very talented Vanessa Grant on the difference between erotica and erotic romance, which is what I've written in the past. I'm paraphrasing myself here. Erotica is a woman's sexual journey toward personal fulfillment, so it's really all about her, and quite selfishly about her. While erotic romance, or steamy romance, as I think of it now, is a couple's story based on the early days of sexual attraction. You know those weeks or months where you can't get enough of each other? Do you remember that?
Oh, I do.
Well, it's generally my romances are within that time frame, so otherwise known as the honeymoon phase. And that's why I seem to have a lot of sex in my books. But it's only because they're in that phase. And let's face it, you know, it's all pretty exciting to remember. And all of this they're dealing with whatever conflict is still tearing them apart. The conflict heightens the sexual tension, and the sex heightens the conflict, because the deeper in love they fall, more pressure comes to bear, or at least that's what I hope. Now, my newer books, the ones I'm writing now that are fresh and the loveliest ones for me, are more family oriented. And while people are having sex because they are in new relationships, often it's in the context of, how are we going to manage to have this romance under the noses of our family members? How are we going to protect our children if we break up? Stories more in that vein. So while I still have a lot of steam, I have a lot of other issues in my books now.
At one time, there was no sex in books, and then there was sex, and you were writing throughout that stage. Has it affected your sales at all?
Oh, you mean with sexier things now being considered mainstream?
Yes,
and
more... that's what I mean.
Right. Not really. My most adventurous series, I say adventurous because it was a little bit out there, is still selling very well. But that could have more to do with the fact that the first book in the series is free. The whole concept of that was very high, was high concept, and I sold that series in 4 minutes.
Oh.
I sent an email asking, I had a gleam in my eye about this idea, and I sent an email to my editor, who had bought a couple of other books from me, and I gave her the idea, and in 4 minutes she got back to me and said, let's make this your first multi-book contract.
Oh, nice.
And it's interesting, but it is a high concept, which I'll explain in a moment. And
it was the times.
Things were changing, and I have to tell you, this was years before 50 Shades of Grey.
Yes.
So we were writing these wonderful books, wonderful stories, adventurous stories, years before. So, yes, E.L. James was not the first, even though it seems like she was.
So which publishing house was that?
This was with Kensington Aphrodisia. They started this new line, and I was actually in the very first anthology that they published with three different authors. And then when I came up with this idea for Perdition House, that's when she jumped on it. But sales were fast and furious. Everyone was selling quite rapidly when they came up with ideas, because the line was launching and it was doing really, really well. And they had absolutely fantastic covers. And that's a whole long story. We could go over time on that one.
That's exciting, though, to sell your concept in 4 minutes. You know, your baby. It's just how thrilling.
After waiting 15 years to sell my very first book, I said 15 years, to have an idea jumped on in 4 minutes was quite literally stunning. I was stunned. And then I had to come up with the actual story.
We just had the idea. That would be a little scary. What is your sexiest story?
So this is Perdition House Part 1, an erotic saga. And then there's Part 2. Hands down, these are the sexiest ones. I called it a saga because it really is a saga about a woman who inherits a former bordello still inhabited by the spirits of the women who lived, worked, and eventually found love there. So when I came up with the idea, it was sort of like, if there was a bordello and the walls could talk, what stories would they tell? And basically that was the email that I sent. And then I had to create this bordello out of that little idea. So what I did was I included dream sequences. The woman inherits it. She's doesn't know what to do. I mean, it's worth a lot of money. Perfect piece of land, and quite lovely. So I decided that in dream sequences, I would have to create several heroines who tell their stories, which are completed in part two. So the first book is meeting all these other heroines in the past, what brought them to actually living and working in a bordello, their reasons. Some of them were desperate, some of them were escaping, some of them were happy to join the house. And then in part two, they find their love, and we know that the spirits are settled once they've found their love again, and they tell their love stories, how they found love in Perdition House. And both books are over 90,000 words. So that's why I call them sagas, because it really is a saga, as opposed to a serial. But it's a saga, and I still get lovely reviews on that.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a lot of fun to write too.
I was.
Which brings us to, how does one write great sex?
Well, you close your eyes and just go. It's like any other scene. And it's much like real life. You know, if you were analyzing every move you made, no babies would ever be born. And, it's not clinical. You do have to just sort of close your eyes and be in the moment and write. Often those scenes are the less edited of my work, because I do really close my eyes and just go.
But you're really inside the characters, so it makes absolute sense. Yeah.
You absolutely have to be inside the characters, inside their hearts,
right?
Not just inside their bodies. Inside their hearts, and all sex scenes have to forward your story, even if it is, a steamier romance. They have to push the story forward and reveal things about their characters.
And they do.
If
they're well done, they do. And what do you think makes a hero sexy?
Oh, easy. Intelligence and humor.
Uh-huh.
I do very little description of muscles.
Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
I didn't notice that. And I have read several of your books. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yes. No, I don't do an awful lot of description. But of course, there are some. And I particularly notice men's forearms. But that's just me. They have no idea what we find appealing. Mm-hmm. It's not sexting. It isn't really.
No photocopies.
But it's definitely intelligence and humor. Maybe I should do more description of muscles, but I don't see brawn alone as appealing. Not in my personal life and not in my writing. A real hero has to display staying power, the kind a woman can count on for life. We're talking a romance hero, not real people, but I think that all those qualities are important in real life too. You want to know that the man you've chosen is still the man you'll choose 20 years from now at the end of your romance, right? As you're stepping into the rest of your life. And that's where we leave our hero and heroine. We leave them when they're stepping into the rest of their life. So maybe that honeymoon phase is behind them, but we know by the end that these people will stick. And that's the happy ending. It's really a happy future.
In reverse, what makes a heroine sexy in your mind?
Well, I think it's the same thing. It's intelligence and humor and knowing what she wants and going for it. And I think that a hero who recognizes that in a heroine is very attractive. And I think that our readers want to be that heroine. They want to feel more confident. They want to be that woman. And maybe if life is handing them lemons right now, maybe they want to see that someone else has worked out their lemonade situation and they're moving forward. That's why I write strong heroines that don't always have a lot of support systems in place. They don't have college educations. And they're doing it anyway.
And what about the whole issue of LGBTQ? Has that affected your storylines as we become more aware of the LGBTQ communities and their needs and feeling as if they're not being addressed? Is it affecting your stories?
Not my stories, no. I write heterosexual couples because that's what I know. But I firmly believe all love stories should have interesting characters and compelling conflict. You'll notice I keep repeating the word conflict because it it's extremely important to a well-crafted story. And I don't really care what orientation the character is. It doesn't matter. Love is love is love. And if they've overcome their conflicts to be together, well, a writer can't ignore that. And it doesn't really matter. I think that Kensington Books has a wonderful line, or they used to anyway, years ago, written for the gay romance market, the gay market, gay mystery, gay everything. It was, and there's some very, very compelling authors in there. So I'm assuming that Kensington has not abandoned that. At the time, they were very forward-thinking. It was a niche market, and they filled it, and they filled it very well. It's some very, very talented authors. I started reading one of them, was a mystery in New Orleans. It was just fabulous, but anyway, it's a long time ago. But I would recommend checking out the Kensington Books website, for sure.
And what about kinky? Do you write kinky?
Nope. Never have. I don't have a feeling for that world. In the Haunted Bordello story, there's a little voyeurism because you can't really have a bordello without the odd peephole. as much for clients as for the opportunities for blackmail, you know, which are quite interesting in that idea there. But the voyeurism is there. It's very minor, and it's there for a reason. I never write BDSM, never think about it. I don't understand the lifestyle myself, so I don't feel competent to write that. And I've actually had an email from a sexual assault survivor. She told me in her email that she loved my books because her therapist told her to find some female-based erotic fiction, and my stories had no triggers in them. She and her girlfriend had to go through the section in the book and open pages, and there were triggers everywhere for this young woman. And then she found mine.
Oh.
And
that must feel good.
I am not... I was in tears at the end of that email because I did change her life. I helped her feel normal again, which was what her therapist wanted her to feel. She wanted her to feel normal sexual desire. And I gave that back to her. And I'm getting teary just now thinking about it.
That's pretty
The email
awesome.
Came in one day, and my daughters were at home from college. I guess it was holiday time or something. And they walked in the door, and I printed off the email, and I showed it to them, and they got teary as well.
Mm.
So, yes, it was
special.
Pretty
moment.
Special.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah, that was...
when your writing touches someone like that...
And changes things.
That's
yes.
The most we could hope, right?
I've had wonderful things happen. I have. Yeah. I've had wonderful things happen. Yes.
Well, my next question was, how important do you think sex is in a romance story? And we kind of talked about that. Was there anything you wanted to add?
Well, I'll answer with a question. How important is sex to a relationship in real life? In the early days, it's one of the very first things, you know, that we're considering when we meet somebody. You know, I'm saying when we're young and available. One of the first things we think of is the physical. Are they tall? Are they short? Blue-eyed or brown-eyed? What is it that you like? I believe that most people have a type, a physical type that they're attracted to more than others. Not everybody likes a tall blonde. Not every fellow likes, you know, long legs. Some people like very athletic builds. So that's got to be appealing to the couple as well. But that person also needs to smell right. If they don't smell right, we will dismiss all the other pretty things about them. Scent is really important. And even the voice needs to be appealing. Particularly for me, I notice voices all the time. And I just noticed now with you and me, my voice is deeper than I think I hear it.
In comparison to yours. Yeah, we do sound different on tape.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I almost always mention voices, particularly men's voices, because I think they can be incredibly sexy.
Oh, yes.
Yes, that's right. It's like they sit up and notice, you know.
Yeah, it reaches right into inside you.
That's right. That's right. And all of this is part of sexual attraction. After the physical attributes are noted, I'm talking about real people now, we need to see the above noted traits, the intelligence, the humor, particularly the humor. I know a young woman who was going out with a fellow that seemed to have everything. He was a pediatrician. He came from a great family. He was a really nice guy. He was very kind-hearted. But she knew there was something off. And then it dawned on her that he had no sense of humor. That he had no sense of humor.
Oh, dear.
And she thought about it really hard and just realized that she just couldn't do it.
Hmm.
So while he had to have, he had all the other things, without humor, how can you get through?
Yeah.
And you know, if you're going to launch your characters into a life in the future, they darn well better be able to laugh.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, definitely.
Yes. Yeah. So, and then sex scenes are full scenes that cover the act, but they should also show other traits as well and move the conflict along. Or in the very best scenes, make the conflict worse or harder to overcome. At the end of any great scene, there should be a big oh shit moment, which will pull the reader along. Because that's how you write a page turner.
Yeah, right? Yeah, absolutely.
You know the moments I'm talking about.
Oh, I do. Yeah. You're what we call a hybrid author. You published with the Big Five, and you've also published on your own. How do you have a preference there, or how do you feel about all that?
Well, I'd love to be making advances. That's, you know, I think most people would. That'd be great, yes. But I also enjoy the lack of deadlines from traditional publishers, which is more than just finishing the book. You know, you get your proofs and your edits, and they all have to be done on their schedule. So Christmas comes, and you don't get a Christmas because they need everything back by December 31st, which happened several years in a row for me. But the December 31st was sort of a false deadline because they weren't even in the office, but writers would have to panic and get this done.
Oh.
So the freedom to set my own schedule. I set my schedule around my own life now, and I'm actually publishing more books per year than before. I don't know that I can continue at this pace, but for now it's working. So, yeah, there are pros and cons to each side.
You have had a long and successful career. If you could go back, is there anything you would tell your younger self?
I would tell myself to jump on new opportunities when they appeared instead of waiting to see how they'd pan out. I was always a little bit cynical about this new publisher or that new agency, and I made some real mistakes with my career, I think. There are things I should have done and I should have moved more quickly. It was probably just hubris, but anyway.
That's what I would say. Was right, though.
Yes,
I mean,
that's
all
right.
You can
only make your decisions on what you think you know at the time. And yes, there you go.
So what are you working on right now?
Right now, my work in progress is titled Craving Jake. It's the third book in my Return to Welcome series. It's still in the early stages when the story gleams beautifully just past the horizon and anything can happen. It's very exciting. I've got like 12 pages written or something. So it's really literally out on the horizon.
And what's your latest release?
The latest release was a Kensington book, but I've now titled it Diamond at Heart, which is about 12,000 words longer than the original. It does have romantic suspense elements, which, it's a little departure for me, but it was a lot of fun. It's a great, great little story, I think, with a huge, huge private investigator named Stack. It's just a lot of fun, and that will be available on October 2nd.
And we have all the information in the show notes with your cover. Great cover.
Great. Oh, yeah. It is pretty, isn't it? Yeah.
Did you make that one?
No, I got that one. A writer I know was doing some covers on the side, and her name is Susan Ann Wall. just as it sounds. And she came up with that one for me. We really wrestled around with the diamonds. And I think that, it came out really, really well. Does. It's a stalker story.
Ah.
And there's a good reason for the stalking. But anyway, not just an obsession. There's good reason for it.
Ah. Mm-hmm. And where can people find you and your books?
Well, like most romance authors, you can find me at my name, www.bonnieedwards.com. If you're just interested in the books, you can always follow me at Amazon at amazon.com/author/Bonnie Edwards. And on that page, you'll find a list of all of my titles, which are all now Kindle exclusive, which they weren't before, but now they are.
Yeah, it works well, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
And so what are you reading now?
Well, I'm rereading Elizabeth Hoyt's Maiden Lane series. And one of the reasons is I'm trying to learn from her wonderful series. It's 12 or 13 books in this series, is how to get readers hooked into the next story so that they will continue. It's she's a wonderful writer and she's got great skill in doing that. So it's something I need to learn. So I'm always trying to learn something new. And also, historical romance takes me away from the problems of the day, you know, like the headlines.
Yes. Talking about getting away from the stresses of the day, do you have a favorite cock or mocktail?
Well, I told myself for years that I liked wine like everybody else, but I don't, you know, I don't. I tried. I thought everybody was drinking wine. Anyway, so I went back to my favorite, which is rye whiskey, on the rocks with a twist and some cola.
There
so, yes, a good old rye and Coke.
Canadian rye?
That's right. Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
Yes.
Do you have a final word?
For new writers, I would say be careful what you wish for, because you can quickly get obsessed. Like I said earlier, I took 15 years to sell my first book. I realize people don't have to do that anymore. But it does take a long time to learn your craft. So if you become obsessed, just be careful what you wish for. And that people should never, ever stop studying craft. It is important to learn your marketing. But without craft, nobody will read your next book. And really, every book you write, you're trying to sell your next book too. So that's my tip.
The wise words. And that brings today's episode with Bonnie Edwards to a close. Thank you, Bonnie.
Thank you, Joanne.
And next week, tune in to Blood, Sweat, and Words for an interview with William Nickel, homicide detective to author. Thanks for listening. Now it's your turn. What do you think about today's topic? You can leave comments for me on my website or email me directly. I'd love to hear from you. If you want to know more about me, check out my podcast website, bloodsweatandwords.com. You can also sign up for my weekly newsletter, which contains writing tips and information about upcoming podcasts. Now, if you really, really enjoyed the show, consider becoming one of my patrons through Patreon and help me pay my podcasting bills. And that's a wrap. I leave you with these wise words spoken by Robin Williams in the Dead Poets Society. We don't read or write poetry because it's cute. We read and write poetry because we are members of the human race, and the human race is filled with passion. And medicine, law, business, engineering, these are noble pursuits and necessary to sustain life. But poetry, beauty, romance, love, these are what we stay alive for. To quote from Whitman, "O me, O life, of the questions of these recurring, of the endless trains of the faithless, of cities filled with the foolish, what good amid these, O me, O life?" Answer: that you are here, that life exists and identity, and the powerful play goes on, and you may contribute a verse. That the powerful play goes on, and you may contribute a verse.
What will your verse be? See you between the lines.